Cześć, witam Was w podcaście Pierwsza Luźna, podcaście o ludziach, a konkretnie o takich, którzy trenują chwytane sporty walki. Jeśli odcinek Ci się spodoba, zostaw lajka lub udostępnij go dalej. Będę Ci bardzo wdzięczny. Miłego słuchania.
My next guest is one of the best European competitors, Santeri Lilius. We met only the next day after he won his second ADCC European Trials. We talk of course about his performance, how hard is to win the trials, some Polish competitors like Mateusz Szczeciński and Mateusz Gamrot, his academy in Spain, Nordic culture, and many more stuff. Hope you enjoy it. Hi Santeri.
Siema.
Pleasure to have you.
Pleasure to be here.
Okay, we can start with anything else than your yesterday performance. Congrats once again. On
Thank
winning
you.
Trials.
Thank you. Again.
Again. Yeah, before we could go into details of yesterday, which trials were more difficult for you? This one or last year?
That's a very good question, actually. I don't know. I think maybe mentally this one, but physically the other one. Because I had 7 matches in that one, and also I had really shit luck with my brackets. So I had 3 champions from years before in a row last year. So this year I got a little bit better bracket for my side, but it's never easy. ADCC trials is never easy. So I would say that nothing was easier, but like mentally I felt harder this year, but physically I think the other year was harder.
Okay. So let's go through your fights. Your first fight was
Faris from Roger Gracie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's young gun. He was strong. We wrestled a little bit, and I pulled guard, and I got to his legs a few times, but he had good leg lock defense. Shout out to Owen O'Flanagan. But I managed to get his back from his leg lock attempt, and I won by 3-0. So that was that. I knew that was gonna be like a harder fight to start with the mm-hmm. tournament, but after that I felt like shit in that match. But after that the ball started rolling and I started to feel a little bit better.
Okay, next one?
Next one was a guy from Lithuania. That's the thing with the trials, you have some killers that you don't even know about. So definitely. I saw his name and I was like, a guy called Mantas. Manta is like a covering in Spanish, it's like a funny thing. So I was like, a guy called covering cannot be good. And then when I saw him, I was like, fuck. he was pretty strong. He actually swept me in the no points time once, but I managed to get to his back as well in the end. So I won that 3-0, I think. Then the third match, I had some English guy. We wrestled, I took him down. And a fourth match, fuck, it's so many matches that it's hard to remember.
Of course.
I had a Spanish guy there. I fought with him once before in Spain, ADCC in Spain. And I leg locked him in Spain, so I knew he was gonna do something different this time. And I guess his strategy was not to do anything in this match.
Okay.
So I pulled guard and he was very like not offensive at all. But I managed to wrestle up and I took him down like from the guard. So 2-0. And then I had a good match. I had that Chris Wojcik guy. I think you filmed it, like, or took some things from that.
Yeah, we have a podcast on Friday, so.
Oh shit! Yeah. I hear he's Polish.
You know, he's
at least his last name.
his last name, yes, but the Polish was his like grandma or granddad or great granddad. So he's, you know, like a whole American. Right now, but of course he know about his heritage and stuff like
he
that.
He so. Speaks Polish or no?
No.
So I'm more Polacek than him.
Yeah,
I can say Szajebiste and Suhajdi Kurwajewane.
With, as you said, around 20 visits in Poland and your vocabulary, yeah, you are definitely more Polish.
Somebody actually wrote to me yesterday that I'm the only Polacek going to the ADCC Worlds from these trials, and I was very happy about that.
Yeah, it looks like the next one was with Chris, because Chris, it was already semi-final.
Chris was semi-final, yeah. Yeah, I had already then Mateusz was done with his matches, so I got to have Mateusz in my corner, Mateusz Szyszyński. So when I have him in my corner, I feel so comfortable because I feel like he's such a such a good brain for jiu-jitsu. So
especially that Chris is a leg locker.
Yeah, we always have this joke that if somebody ankle locks me, I will kill myself because like I have been ankle locked by Mateusz 20,000 times, and like I think I literally have the best defense to his ankle lock in the world because he submits everybody with this thing, and he submitted me so many times that I've like mastered the angle of how to hide my heel and everything there. Okay.
You know, I never trained with Mateusz yet, but I heard that when he catches like straight ankle lock, it feels different. Like nobody catches it like this. Like it's strong even when he don't pull yet. It's you feel that there, it's something else.
I think it's something that his body allows him to do because he has like a weird body for a fighter. He's quite tall and then he's skinny, but he has like rib muscles and like strong shoulders, so he can like crunch his body around the ankle lock very strong. And it fucking hurts when your heel is stuck to his ribs. He has a very good straight ankle lock with the shotgun grip, but that Aoki lock that he does is brutal, and that actually hurts on the outside of the heel, not like in the ligaments. So I actually, when I trained with him the first time, I kind of hurt, I didn't hurt my knee, but I felt the pain in my knee. And that's why I think most people, we tap to it so fast, because it fucking hurts your knee. And I've never seen anyone be able to do it the same way as he does. So even though Wojcik is, he does Aoki locks, I wasn't too concerned about this one because I would have to kill myself if he ankle locks me. So,
did you, before you met Mateusz, did you believe that straight ankle locks is something that you don't tap to
that? I used to give it to people, like, because I'm very strong in leg lock defense. I have very strong ankles, and I work a lot like ankle mobility and small movements, because people all the time attack my legs, but I don't really feel, even outside heel hook is not something I'm very worried about. I don't know if you saw my matches, but some guys got to my heel a few times, but it don't really, I just don't feel it that bad. I'm strong there. But when I trained with him the first, I was like, oh, so it actually, it does work. I think he submitted me 7 times in 5 minutes, and no one before that has done that to me. And like, especially being a lighter competitor than me, this was 2 years ago, by the way, not like 5 years ago. It was 2 years ago in Lego Camp in Kowatka. And I was so surprised. I was like, holy shit, like, I need to train with this guy. And basically, I know now he likes me, but I didn't even know if he liked me. I just became his friend without him asking for it. And I was like, we will fucking train. I will train until I don't get ankle locked with you. And I still get ankle locked, so we will train some more. But having him and going against a leg locker is always great because he has such a good knowledge about the positions and where to go and where not to go. And I think he was actually more worried for me than I was, because I was like, oh, don't worry, I have you and I Aoki lock. How is he going to Aoki lock me? I actually went with Nicky Ryan in the Quintet last Sunday in Japan, and he went for an Aoki lock as well. And like, I didn't want to do it because I don't want to look like an idiot, but I could have defended it with my hands in the air. Because like, he went for it, he got a bite, but like, it's just not the same as with Mateusz. Okay. I didn't feel like he could break my knee or break my ankle.
Mateusz in his, like, I believe, third fight was fighting other Mateusz
Flaga from Krakow.
Yeah, and before that fight, Mateusz fought, I don't remember who, but there was like a heel hook exchange, and the guy was heel hooking him, and his heel was so high. It I was like, oh my god, it nothing on his face, on Mateusz's face, nothing, any scar. So I thought, okay, so it's maybe interesting with Szczeciński, because he definitely have some capabilities of defending those leg locks. So Mateusz go to Aoki like straight away, very hard, and that was a quick one. So yeah,
I trained with Flaga in Krakow in I was there in March. And we actually spoke about this one, and he has very good ankle lock defense. I tried to do it to him, but he defended it very well. And I have the same details, not as good, but like, I know the same details that Mateusz uses. So I kind of tried it on him, but I just couldn't get anywhere even close. Flaga does a very good job at defending it, and he just didn't fall on his back with me. But then Mateusz goes and ankle locks him in, like, I don't know how long it took, 20 seconds or something. It's just crazy. But that just tells you the difference between his ankle locks and anyone else's. Mm-hmm. I think it's something to do with his body, how he's able to position it and being skinny but being strong at the same time. Because, like I don't know if I'm too big or too stupid or something. I just cannot get the same angle done on that lock.
No, as you said, you never felt that anybody goes like this, so maybe this is something that only he can do, and it's good for him.
Fuck, I really think it's the only, because other, you see now in tournaments, everyone does Aoki locks.
Mm-hmm.
Even at the quintet, the whole B team, they were using the shotgun grip to do the leg lock exchanges, and it feels old school doing like the regular ankle lock grip anymore.
You know, it may be that B team is doing this because of Mateusz.
I think so. Yeah, apparently he ankle locked the shit out of everybody there, which is not a surprise because he ankle locks the shit out of everybody anywhere. It doesn't matter where you go, you'll get ankle locked.
Yeah,
think Gordon Ryan is the only jiu-jitsu guy in the world who hasn't been ankle locked by him. I think any other high level competitor more or less has been victimized by that fucking ankle lock.
As we talk about Mateusz and his yesterday performance, funny thing that because, you know, like, it was an upset that he lost to Josef, but in the end, after seeing how Josef fought with Taza, losing this day to him by judge's decision was quite good performance, because Josef was on fire yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to look at it, but that's not why we're here.
We're
here to win, and Mateusz is extremely upset about losing to Josef Chen, especially beating him relatively easy the year before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that just tells you how good Josef Chen is also, because in 1 year he was able to make a switch from fighting a guy who submitted him in 1 minute to fighting him very good and, like, mm-hmm. doing a lot of good stuff to him. And also, Josef Chen doesn't have any fear. Maybe it's him being young or something, but he's not afraid to fight dangerous guys. So he did very good job with Mateusz, and that just means that now in Mateusz's side, we need to improve on his aspect. Mateusz still has a lot of things that he can work to get better. And I believe if they would, like, train or do a submission only fight, I think the favor would be in Mateusz's side, because he's so unbelievably aggressive with submissions and, like, so capable of killing you at any position. But in rule set, in when there's points, that's when the weakness of the samurai style comes to play. So sometimes he might get referee decision loss or something, because he's trying to kill the guy all the time, and maybe the guy is trying to score points. So that's what can happen sometimes. But also, the 77 kilo was killer this year. It was absolute shark tank.
Definitely.
And I don't know who the fuck made the brackets, but basically they had everybody who was good on one side and then Taza on one side. So I don't know who the hell made it. But it felt a little bit unfair for anyone who's going to go through that bracket, that basically they have to fight Josef Chen, Mateusz, Langacker, and then go to the final. Mm-hmm. So this time it was Josef Chen, but I believe if we would run this tournament today, maybe Langacker would win. Or if we run this tournament today after today, maybe Mateusz would win. It's impossible to say, because these guys are so good and so close to
really
each other.
Yeah, those matchups, definitely. Yeah. You said about the progress of Josef Chen in 1 year, and this has become a pattern in the highest level of jiu-jitsu. There are more and more guys who make this quick progress, like Luke Griffin. You know, like, he was, like, we talked today, and he was, like, you know, losing in the second fight of the trials, switched to Austin, to New Wave, and in, like, 7 or 8 months he won those trials, and 66 kilo yesterday. Owen Jones, like, another, like, guy who show up, and, you know, nobody expect that he will beat Ashley, and he did it. So it's very exciting times to follow the scene.
I think it's also like a mental switch that we have. I don't know about Luke or Owen, but like, for instance, for me, it took a long time to start to get good results. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons was that my mind wasn't quite at the right place because I was like too emotionally invested in this. So I believe, for instance, I don't know about Owen Jones too much. I know he trains in UK at Apex, I believe.
Yes.
But I think with Luke Griffith is... he probably went to Austin and he saw how the best in the world train, and he was influenced by this in a good way. And probably he saw that they are human as well. Because I believe what happens is when you train at home, like when I only trained exclusively in Finland or exclusively in Spain, I thought my rivals are superheroes. I thought all they do is train and fucking read the Bible and mm-hmm. say prayers and train and eat very clean and never do anything bad. But like, I believe once you actually meet them, you see how relaxed we, like high level athletes, sort of are also.
Mm-hmm.
We also have fun and we have rest days and we feel like shit and we perform like shit. And that's probably something that once like a aspiring competitor sees that it's okay to make errors and to have bad days and things like that, then you start to feel much better. And when you feel better, you feel you train better and then you will achieve things much better. And I don't know, this is just a theory, but for me, that kind of happened. After mm-hmm. meeting, after like becoming really good friends with Mateusz and Kamil, for instance, for me, I realized that they're like guys who, like, we do this for fun. It's mm-hmm. so much fun doing these things. Even this trip, obviously, the boys didn't get the results that they wanted, but like it was a lot of fun the whole time, and I love these trips, and I'll be here for the next trials, even though I will not have to compete, but I'll be here because this is so much fun. And when you're having fun, you're gonna have a good time competing. Whereas before, this would be like a chore for me. Like, oh fuck, I have to go fight and the weight cut will be shit and mm-hmm. I'll be alone in the hotel room and I'll be worried and my coach will yell at me. And now we're just having jokes until we compete and we win together and we lose together. And I believe that's something that like athletes are starting to do more and more now. And also our level is going up. I believe this kid Owen Jones, he can do well at ADCC, especially if people don't... if people underestimate him there.
You said, I won't have to do another trials. This is from the mindset that you're gonna win the finals.
What finals? Oh, you mean for the...
like...
oh, but there is second trials in Europe now.
Okay, you said about second trials.
I thought
you already have a mindset, you know, I will win the world finals and I automatically will be able to compete on the next
plan.
One.
That's the plan. Fuck, doing this trial is hard work. I said after last trials that yes. I never want to repeat this again because I feel exactly like I feel right now. Like, look at me, my fucking knees are burnt. My, like, you see skin in my knees because I wrestled yesterday. I feel like shit. I probably lost 5 kilos of weight yesterday and I haven't slept. And this is a hard day. So I recommend anyone who win the trials fucking do well at the world so you don't have to do this again. Unless you're a masochist. But that's the name of the game. So I have to do well now at the world. I believe a medal is enough to get qualified for the next one. But that's the plan for me. But if it is trials, seems like I'm doing pretty well at the trials. This is only my second trials ever. Mm-hmm. And I've only won. I've never lost at the ADCC trials.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. And what do you think if today you fight Hulk from that day in ADCC, what would happen?
Well, today I think he would kill me because I'm tired from yesterday. But if me now in my peak form, I think it would be a lot different. I don't know how he's training right now. I don't know what he's doing. But he beat me last year in wrestling. And I realized after that I cannot fight these guys at where they are the best. So I had decent wrestling last year, good guard passing, and okay level guard. And after that, I realized that I just need to do much more guard work. So I basically took out my pen and paper and I took details from my friends, Mateusz, Kamil, Owen O'Flanagan, Warczynski, everyone who's good. I basically studied what they do. And I train a lot with Owen O'Flanagan as well. and he probably has one of the best guards in the world at my category. So I've learned a lot of cool details from him about playing guard, and I'm starting to do something similar in the guard as him. Obviously, he's much better than me at doing this, but I've studied his game and I've been able to implement it a few times, hit some entries that he's been teaching me and use a certain kind of grip. And we also have this secret guy that we watch on instructionals. I'll not say his name, so no one knows, but I'll tell you after the podcast. But we watch this guy a lot, and I believe one of the keys to the why Owen is so good is his attention to detail, and I'm slowly starting to kind of understand what he meant by that. And basically, I've been working on my guard a lot, and I played a lot of guard also yesterday. I think my power is that I'm good everywhere. So if I need to pass someone's guard, I'll pass it, or I'll try. If I need to wrestle, I'll wrestle. So I don't have like a big weakness, but with Hulk, I knew he's gonna be strong at guard passing, so I didn't want to play guard, but he was better wrestler than me, so it did. I got taken down and then I had to play guard, so that's a shit plan. So if I would fight with him now, I would probably try to wrestle a little bit, see how it goes. It's hard to take him down. He's so small and so jacked that it feels like hitting a wall when you shoot in. And he's also like weird. He gets tired. He was so tired when we fought, but he still was explosive, which is like, I don't understand that. When I get tired, my explosiveness goes out the window, but he was still extremely explosive.
Maybe he just like looked tired.
He was tired. Okay. He was tired. No, I think Hulk cannot do a fight without getting tired. He was exhausted in all of them. But his superpower is that even though he's tired, he can still go. Mm-hmm. It's like a pit bull dog, you know. They get so tired, but the will just takes them.
You think it's more like a mental thing or physical thing?
I think probably he's too jacked. Like he has so much muscle mass that he's...
But he's still going.
Oh. I think that's a mental thing, and I think he's perfect at the way to fight at ADCC. He was very smart when to start, when to rest, when to do things, and like, I mean, he's a dog, he's an animal, so it's very difficult to fight with him, but I hope we fight soon, and I hope I'll get to run that back. It'll be different. I cannot promise I'll win, because I don't fucking know. But I'll promise I'll have more tools in my arsenal to fight this guy. I've learned so much more from wrestle ups, from the guard, leg lock entries. I have so many new things that I can do, so I would be very comfortable fighting with him.
Just thought about that. What would be like your perfect run on ADCC finals? This is four fights to win, right? Who would you like to be those guys you beat to feel the most satisfying to win?
I don't know who will be there this year.
Yeah, I know, but
like from last year,
like fantasy matchmaking, you know.
Well, anybody who is old and retired and injured, like current ones, I don't. You see, it doesn't matter. I don't think like this because I don't train for a person. I train for a goal. So it doesn't matter. I would like to take everyone who is good. Like if I could choose right now, give me Bodoni. He's the best right now. So I want to fight this guy. I don't go there to get like easy medals or anything. Like if I beat Bodoni but lose the next round, I'm still pretty fucking good.
So that's my question. Not the easy way, or maybe the hard way.
Yeah.
The perfect bracket that if you win would be the best result you can have.
Well, then anyone. I would like to take first round someone like Hulk probably.
Rematch with Hulk in the first round. Perfect.
I don't want to wrestle with him in the final. I would like to fight Wagner Rocha. I don't know if he's coming, and not because I think he's a pussy or something. It's the opposite. I think he's a hero, even though obviously he had the doping scandal. But like, if we're talking honestly, I wonder how many other people from the ADCC circuit would test positive. So I don't. It's not a thing that downplays him in my mind at all. And we were actually gonna fight in Nogi Worlds had I won my match with Andre Porfirio, but because I'm dumb, I got knee-barred, so I couldn't have a match with Wagner. I believe Wagner is very good, and he's somebody. I saw him competing at the Nogi Worlds, and he was there with his family, and I was thinking, shit, like when I'm his age, I want to be like him. Like, mm-hmm. obviously he tested positive after that, so it's not great analogy before that, but like, he looked so good. He was warming up with his son, his whole family was there, and they just seemed to have a lot of fun, and he's in his 40s and still going strong. So I was mm-hmm. like, shit, that's a cool guy. Like that's a cool situation to be in. So I would have enjoyed to fight with him. But yeah, Hulk, somebody in the first round, doesn't matter. I don't really want to say names because it doesn't matter who I'll get. I'll probably end up fighting Bodoni sometime if I do well at ADCC, and I want to fight these guys. I don't want to fight anyone who is easy, even though at ADCC there is nobody easy. But give me all the good names and we will fight.
Yeah, the fight with Bodoni may also happen on Polaris in some circumstances, right?
Hopefully, I'm just not in the Grand Prix.
Yeah, I know, but maybe something will
happen. Shout out to Polaris
happen.
For not having me.
And what about the final of yesterday trials? You fought also Finnish guy, his name was...
Simola,
yes. Do you know him well?
No, we've never trained together.
Okay.
With him. I knew that he's like a ADCC strategist. So he's very good at the rule set. I don't know if he's ever had a submission at the trials. He's done a lot of trials. He's very experienced in this. And like, I think no one expected him to do so well as he did yesterday. I mean, he took out Frejovic, for instance, who looked very good yesterday. But he makes the fight very difficult for you. He wrestles a lot and he plays by the points. So I knew it was going to be a tough match. Especially we're both from Finland for the same weight category. There's been some online talking who's the better guy out of us. Although I have always like been quite high in the rankings and he's been a little bit below me. But yesterday I always figured in my head that if we'll compete, like he needs to deserve that chance. And yesterday he deserved the chance to compete with me for the trials win. And that's exactly kind of what I figured. He will try to wrestle with me in the beginning, and I'm not like the best wrestler in the world, but like I had a guy from Iran, like a wrestling coach from Iran, at my gym for 5 years.
Okay.
And he actually unfortunately passed away in 2021, so I kind of said to myself that fuck, I'll wrestle for Babak. I will win this thing by wrestling because it's the finals and I didn't want to pull guard. And I knew Simola will be very smart. If I do some bullshit takedown to guard pull, he will like disengage, so I'll have to come up. And I didn't want to show him that I'm not comfortable in wrestling. So we wrestled. And I took him down after a few minutes, I don't remember, with a double leg.
Mm-hmm.
And basically after that it was my game. I knew he was gonna try to come up very fast, so I didn't wanna like give him too much space. And then he went from my leg and I got to his back with one hook after that, and ended up armbarring him from that.
Did you watch his semifinal with Frankovic?
No, I didn't watch it.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
But I mean, let me imagine, it was a referee decision.
Yeah, it was, and there was some controversy. You know, I talked with guys from Alligatores, so obviously they was like in favor of Piotr, but they really was like, he was more active, that was a shit decision. I don't know if it's true, but someone told me that the judges table was, in this fight, was mostly guys, judges from Finland, so... You know, some conspiracy theories.
Conspiracies.
Don't know.
I cannot say shit about that because I had in 2022 I had a crazy match with Adam Nietzschewicz, and then the referee table was from Finland and I won. So I don't know if the conspiracy is true. Then thank you Finnish referees for for my win as well. I don't know, but the thing with Frejovic is that he's very, very good when he gets to play his game. But I believe if they went to overtime, he had to wrestle a little bit. And Simola is very good at making you look like shit when you wrestle with him. So he like, even when we fought, he did some like fucking 20 collar ties in 2 seconds. And like my like face is like all cut up from his nails and everything. So it's like he put such a pace on you that probably the referees thought that Frejovic is also not engaging. And the thing with Davis is that although they consider the whole match, the referees, imagine they see thousands of matches, well, not thousands, but hundreds of matches per day. Mm-hmm. So how the hell are they going to remember exactly what happened 5 minutes ago versus what happened recently, minute mm-hmm. ago or 2 minutes ago? So Simola is very good at winning the overtime. I believe he did that like 3 matches in a row mm-hmm. yesterday or 4. I didn't watch his matches, but he did that to the guy from Israel who beat Tarik Hopstock. He did that to Vegard from Norway as well. He beat them by overtime. So we're talking about an experienced competitor who knows the rules here. So I don't know. Also in the trials that I won, Frejovic got a win over him by a referee call as well. So it's difficult to say. If you go to referee decision, anyone can win. So you should never feel
of course
good or bad about winning it. When I went with referee decision to Niečvič, I was like, fuck, I lost. Because mm-hmm. referee decision usually means me coming from the IBJJF circuit means that bye-bye, the shower is calling. Because okay. we never win the referee decision. So when I won, I was like, holy shit.
Okay. I know that you visit time to time also Olga Torres and train with Piotr. And did you have a chance to train also with his coach, with Radek Turek? Because I have this feeling there is something similar with those guys, like the vibe they give, like they are very calm people, not looking like a professional fighters, and yeah. then they show up and great performance. Radek, every time he fought on the finals, and I believe it was 3 or 4 times, he never lost in first fight. So mm-hmm. yeah. It is really something.
He's like, done 4 ADCCs.
4.
Fuck. You know,
Three or four.
Yeah. I fought him once in Berlin Open in IBJJF. I fought with Radek Turek.
Nice.
I was like 25 or 22 or something. Yeah.
What was the result?
I won by leg lock.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
I got him in a belly down estima lock. And he hurt his ankle in that match. And that was, I didn't know much about Poland then, but I remember thinking, fuck, Polish people are crazy, because he kept on fighting after that. So I popped his leg, and I don't remember if he tapped or if he screamed or maybe the referee stopped it, but that fight mm-hmm. was over with. But that was the days when IBJJF still ran 2 tournaments at the same time. So we had like gi at the same day as oh, well. Okay. So Radek just went to the gi, beat up some guys with a purple ankle, and then we were gonna fight again in the final, and then he came to me and he said, man, I cannot fight again, my ankle is fucked. Okay. And he showed me his ankle, it was wrapped up, and he was like fucking purple, I swear to God.
Yeah, he's a character. I met him first in 2011 in Nottingham. We went for ADCC to watch, and that's a funny story, because we completely underestimate UK prices and also the guy who was supposed to host us when we already landed in London. It happened that he isn't living in Nottingham but in Birmingham, and he don't have a car, so we have to commute some way, and we are like basically in deep shit. And Łukasz Michalec, who was then ZB Tyszka student, he took his phone, called him, and Zbyszku, there is a problem. So we slept on the floor in the Polish competitors' hotel.
Oh no.
No, it was very fun, because, you know, we were around the stars, uh-huh. like Marcelo Garcia, like Andre Galvao. You know, you go to the elevator and there is Paul Harris, and you go to the mat and there is Gabi Garcia. It was really, really cool experience. But I remember first time talking to Radek, and in 1 second I thought that he's different. The way he talk about jiu-jitsu, there's something, like, for me, he's like a Polish John Danaher, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, a little bit weird guy, but with such a knowledge and experience and the way of thinking that, yeah. And he don't give a fuck about anything. He could be, you know, like a earn from jiu-jitsu from many, many years if he would like to, you know,
commercialize it.
Yeah, commercial. And he's like a PE teacher, and he have an Instagram profile, but don't have it before. Yeah, in my opinion, he was like a really, really big.
I went to I trained with Frejovic once, but not in Alligadores. I trained with him at the Berserkers team.
Oh,
yeah, man,
that is a tough camp.
So I was here for like a MMA show. We were in, I think it's in Warsaw. It was as well. We stayed close to the airport, and I wanted to go somewhere to train. And I remember, shit, I know a guy from Poland, Radek Turek. So I messaged him on Facebook, and he answered to me like 2 weeks later. And he goes, hey man, yeah, you can go train, this is the address, and go there. So I was like, cool. So I went with my friend Jack Mason. He's a pro MMA fighter as well. And the Uber drops us off in a school, and we were like, what the fuck is this? So then like I asked some kid, I was like, hey man, like, hey little girl, is there like fighting here? And she goes like, yeah. And then she brings me to like a guy who is cleaning the place, or like a janitor, and I go Radek Turek, and he go started to shadow box, and then he walked me to where the gym is, and I hear heavy, it's inside a school, like there's children with backpacks and everything going to class, and then I hear heavy metal playing hard, and it's like a school gymnasium.
yes, I know what you're talking about. I was there a few years back. And yeah, it was they were then Alliance Warsaw.
Yeah.
And they switched to being under the Berserkers team with Buggy, Polish legend of Polish Jiu-Jitsu. And now, in some way, they are part of Alligatores, and it's a complicated situation.
That was a funny time, because when I went there to train, first guy that I trained with was Frejovic. And I knew Poland is good in grappling, but like, I go there and I was like, hello, and my name is Santeri, and like he and another guy spoke English, but not so many guys I think felt comfortable speaking English. So I was like, okay, cool. So do you want to train? And my first round, like a warm up round, was with Frejovic, and I was like, fucking hell, the level in Poland is so good. I couldn't do anything to him, and I was already a black belt, and like I won a lot of tournaments. Then I was like, Jesus Christ, this fucking guy is so good. And we trained the whole session together. I did so many rounds with Frejovic, and it was very even. Like he got me a few times with some leg lock entries, and he was so flexible and so good. And I think I maybe took him down or something once. And I remember thinking like, fucking hell, the level here is so good. And then I talked to my friend Jesse Rollin from Finland, 2 times ADCC European champion. And I sent him a picture. I was like, man, I went to this place to train, and there was these guys, and they were fucking good. And he was like, oh yeah, that's Frejovic. He's fucking good in ADCC. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. And yeah, so that was my first time training in Poland. And the first guy that I get is Gumis.
yeah. As we talk about Polish guys, you train or fight. What about another Mateusz Gamrot?
Gamrot, yeah, he sent me a voice message before the trials. I still gotta teach him my name, because he keeps calling me Santerini.
I think he knows your name.
He doesn't give a fuck. But he fucks up everyone's name always in UFC interviews and everything. Like, did you see, now he's fighting Fisiev, whose name is Rafael, and he makes some video where he's Rafael, because Rafael is a Polish name.
Yes.
Gamrot don't give a fuck, but I love Gamrot. He is so cool. And we trained together loads of times. He is very good friends with Mateusz and Kamil. So we trained together in leg lock camp. I believe he's been there twice, the same camps that I've been to. And then he came to Spain to my gym to train. He's actually been to my gym once before that, but I didn't know him then too well. And then he's been once when we had this secret camp training where we invited some of the best guys from Europe to train, and he was there. And basically he just wrestle fucks the shit out of all of us.
Yeah, do you believe, like, because he won the trials once and...
Twice? Didn't he win twice?
But he competed on the finals only once.
Yeah, because he was injured on the second one.
Okay. As we talked, that the guys are getting better and better really quick. Do you believe at this point, MMA fighter who, you know, train more grappling than most of the guys who fight MMA, still could do it? Or like, you know, this 2 years period changed the game?
We're talking about Gamrot, right? Like, yes. If Gamrot would sign up for the trials. So at the secret camp, I saw him sparring. I will not say any names, but I saw him sparring with some of the guys who competed yesterday and went quite high. And he did really, really well mm-hmm. with them. It depends, I guess, on his goals, because at the ADCC, for the trials, for us, mean so much. Like, I would have let something break yesterday to win mm-hmm. this tournament. But obviously, if he fights in the UFC, he makes so much more money than we do from fighting. So it doesn't make sense for him to get injured in this. So maybe someone would be able to submit him with a leg lock or something, and he would tap a little bit prematurely not to get injured. But if we talk about Gamrot, who would, let's, for some reason, if he would stop MMA and he would only focus on ADCC mm-hmm. and he would train for 1 year, I believe he would be extremely difficult to beat at mm-hmm. that tournament. He's very good with the rules. And in wrestling, like, we always joke about Gamrot, like, he's similar to Hulk. He gets tired, but he doesn't give a shit about being tired. Like, when I train with him, he breathes just as hard as I do, but he doesn't slow down. And me and Kamil always say that maybe it's because Gamrot doesn't understand that he's tired. The information hasn't gone yet from the lungs to the head. He just doesn't understand that he's there.
Yeah, like, I have mad respect for him that he went... With all his MMA career, he still went to the New York, to Danaher, to prepare, to train. And he was like, there is this famous video that he said, like, I don't know what is happening. They fuck me up. The little guys, what the fuck? I feel like white belt. But he, you know, still sticks there and train there. Of course, he got Gary Tonon in his first, so not a very easy fight to start. But as you said, I believe also if he for some reason focus on pure grappling, he would be a beast. Okay, Santeri, let's talk about you more than other guys.
Other Polish people.
How Finnish guy lands in Spain and lived there?
So the year was 2014 and I was a brown belt. Then I just finished my studies in the Sports Institute of Finland, and I wanted to like do jiu-jitsu full-time. So I got my black belt under Roger Gracie, and he had a gym in Malaga at the time. Not like a particularly big academy, but they needed like an assistant coach there. Mm-hmm. So I got offered a job to teach jiu-jitsu in Spain in Malaga, and I just took it.
And at this point, you was already focused on, you know, your career as a competitor and want to, you know, achieve big things as a competitor, or you know, because like moving to small gym in Malaga doesn't seem like the best option for competitor, more like for a coach.
Yeah, but you have to realize that I came from Finland then, when back in that time jiu-jitsu wasn't very strong in Finland. We only had one gym that like wins the ADCC trials. And actually, crazy story about Finland, there is a gym that's been at, the one guy from that gym or more has always been at every single ADCC editions. This year might be the first one that they will not have a guy, because Simola is from that gym mm-hmm. and he lost yesterday. But usually that gym, the one from Tampere, always has somebody at the ADCC every year since like 2002 or something. Mm-hmm. Somebody has been there. But other than that, jiu-jitsu in Finland wasn't very big. And like for me to compete, I was training with a group of guys who we were all very young and we wanted to achieve things, but like our training wasn't very good at home, and I just wanted to do something. And I much rather than working at the store and to pay for my living, at least I could make money with jiu-jitsu. And I figured that the airport of Malaga is much closer to all the tournaments than the airport of Helsinki, so at least I'll save some money in flights. So I just left and never looked back since that. And it took me forever, but I'm glad to say that right now in Spain we have fucking good training there. I have a lot of professionals. I had five guys compete yesterday. They all went, one guy win three matches, he lost to Ashley Williams. One guy won one, lost one. Oh, one guy lost the first round, and this guy's 16-year-old blue belt. And okay. And he was ranked to be the dark horse in this category by BJJ Heroes.
And he was like in a pro category?
Yeah, of course. Okay. He won ADCC European Open here in Warsaw.
Yeah, like a few months back.
Yeah, he won the ADCC Spanish Nationals Absolute, so made three black belts there. Christian Amador is this guy's name. 16 years old, blue belt, absolutely an animal. So, and I have more. I have many more guys in Spain right now, up and coming. Kind of like Owen Jones style kids who are like fully invested in jiu-jitsu. They're young. And then I have, I'm very lucky because I have like my size. I have a couple guys who are wrestlers. I have the champion of Spain in freestyle wrestling at 92 kilos, trains in my gym. So I have that in wrestling, and I have a couple other guys who are very good to train with. So for us, the training is excellent in Spain right now.
Would you say, you know, but trying to be objective, that you have like the best gym in Spain?
Yes.
Okay.
By far.
And where would we look for the like the biggest competitor if we talk about that?
Like who would be the biggest?
Yeah, the best, the biggest.
Well, obviously me. I've done the most, but like Spanish. There was a guy yesterday who is from my gym. Daniel Herrero is his name. He mm-hmm. got yesterday. He won three matches and he lost. I believe the quarterfinal to the Mirats Avionian, who went to the final. Mm-hmm. This guy is very good at 99 kilos. ADCC trial silver medalist. Mm-hmm. Won ADCC nationals in Spain so many times. So he is very good. And then we have Nico Medina, who's a world champion in IBJJF, beat Andy Murasaki in the finals. This was the Euros. Yeah, this was the European. We have a lot of good guys there. The thing with Spain is that it's such a big country that it's a little bit divided. So imagine it's 40 million people, sorry, living in different places. And Spain is so huge. It takes hours to fly from south to the north.
Yeah, but the center is almost empty, right?
Well, there's Madrid in the center, but other than that, it's almost...
Yeah, it's like there are big problem that the smaller cities and villages are
abandoned.
Like, you know, it's a problem in most of the countries right now because of the, you know, global war, but in Spain I heard it's really bad.
Yeah, but also for me, what I have going for me is that I live in Malaga, where everyone comes for holiday. Like, that's how I met Gamrot the first time. He just showed up to my gym and he even paid for training. Mm-hmm. I didn't know him back then, so fuck me, we shouldn't have charged him. But like, having him come to train, I've had so many good people who just come to train there for fun. And during COVID, I had Tom Halpin for 1 year at my gym. I had Fionn, I had Dara O'Connell, I had Taylor Pierman, I had everyone visit me for that. So we have a lot of good training all the time because of visitors. Yeah. And the core group is also very strong. And who wouldn't want to come to Malaga, Spain?
Andalusia is my goal from Fures already.
Yeah,
like I would really like to see it because of, you know, the history, the Mao monuments and stuff like that. So I will also visit you someday.
Sounds like a plan.
And it's interesting because I have a guest called Maciek Okraszewski. He is a podcaster. He has a huge Polish podcast. It's called Dział Zagraniczny. It's like in paper, you have like part of, about foreign stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's like specialized in topics about South America and Spain, because he studied the Iberistic. I don't know, it's English word. Mm-hmm. But he also lived in Spain. And he told me in this podcast that generally, you know, that was, he trained there a few years back, but generally Spanish people are not very into martial arts, and like most of the people who trains there are like, you know, with immigrant roots, or they are immigrants.
I was gonna say that. So yesterday my competition team, one guy half Venezuelan, one guy fully Venezuelan, the other guy fully Venezuelan, Ladero half German. the regular Spanish guy is not very into competing, but Spain has good judo, very good judo. We have two world champions right now. Okay. We have they have a very good judo program, and the University of the Malaga is very known for their judo program. We have Olympic silver medalists teaching at Malaga University. So what I do, because I'm very smart, I look for the guys who don't make the team, and we kind of call them like, hey man, come to train jiu-jitsu. So I have a lot of those guys. I have the number two in Spain at 100 kilos right now, training at my gym, fully invested in the jiu-jitsu right now. This guy's name is Pedro Pablo. He's 26 years old, retired from judo, 100 kilos, and he got silver at the absolute in Euros after training 3 weeks in the gi. And the only problem with this guy is he likes to pull side control. He thinks he's such a good position. Mm-hmm. But now we've taught him a little bit more, and now he's a proper belt, and you can expect big things from a guy who's done 16 years of judo at highest level, and then he shifted into jiu-jitsu. So I have a lot of those guys. I have many judokas there who come from this. I have this kid called Sergio. He's actually fully Spanish, but he's from Murcia, and he just moved to train under our program, and he's the same size as all the competitors. I have 65 to 77 kilos. I have nobody my size who compete actively at ADCC right now. I only have bigger or smaller. And this guy has like a wrestling and judo background, and he's injured right now, but like you can expect him to do extremely well later on.
Maybe this is the way that, you know, like people now train wrestling for grappling competition, but doing some judo, no-gi judo, you know, that's maybe a surprise for your rivals. So
well, and if you look at
more who's like throwing than shooting, you know?
Yeah, and if you look at who's the best guy now in stand-up in jiu-jitsu world, it's Owen Livesey. We figured it out last weekend.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Nicky Rod was pulling guard. Obviously, people say that, oh, it's because of the rule set, but let me ask you a question. If you're a wrestler, how good does it feel to go on your ass and come up then? Like, my wrestling coach, Babak, like, I don't know if he slept, like, arching in a bridge. Because, putting his back on the floor was impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when he goes to the bed, he's, like, bridging to the side. Like, he just wouldn't go to his back or to his ass. So, like, I believe Owen Lives is the best guy in stand-up. I've trained with him, and it was fucking terrible. And even, obviously, Nicky Rod took him down from the guard, but, like, he didn't land clean takedowns on him, which Owen landed on Nicky Rod. So I think if Owen Lives is the best and he has a judo background, maybe we should look into that as well. Wrestling obviously is king for ADCC, but like there's a lot of things that judo has to offer, and I believe the combo of these two, sort of what Sergio does, is very good.
Sure. Santori, how you liked Japan? And now, I mean, not in sports way, we will talk about Quintet in a moment, but the country, the people.
So I really like that Polish word, zajebiste. It was fucking cool. It's exactly what you think about when you think of Japan, but better. So it feels like you're in a movie and you're the main character there, because the people are so polite and they're so like watchful for you. So like no one ever bothers you, no one ever makes any noise, no one ever like does anything to like make your stay hard there. They all bow at every single moment. Like I had this bow off with all the guys there, because if you bow to them, they will bow back to you. Mm-hmm. And if you bow to me, I'll bow back. So we kept on bowing like two idiots for a long time. But the culture is amazing, the place is absolutely amazing, the food is amazing. I mean, I only stayed for 5 days, but I wish it would have been longer. But obviously I had to try also, I had to come straight back.
Mm-hmm.
But next time I go, I'll definitely fly in business class, because 14 hours and a half is hell in economy. But other than that, Japan was amazing, and I can't wait to go back.
Okay. You probably didn't have a chance, but it would be interesting also to train there, because their grappling culture probably of course it's also different than ours.
Yeah.
And it may be very interesting in many ways, in social way and in sport way.
I would like to, definitely. There's a very good guy also training in Japan. I believe his gym is in Kyoto, maybe, called Roberto Satoshi. I don't
know if you,
yeah, he was fucking animal.
He was like around 2010-12.
Yeah.
He was like this beast in lightweight.
Yeah.
He was first who beat Michael Lange
at the Euros 2012, I believe.
2012.
Yeah, I remember. I was there. Yeah, so I didn't have the chance right now, but I would like to go train at his place some year. He's amazing, that guy. And now he's doing more MMA, but like I don't think he won the Worlds, but he got like silver after an injury. And he won the Euros and a lot of good titles, and he trained in Japan for that.
Yes.
So like, I believe there is something special in Japan. And we didn't train there. We went to train together with the Polaris team only. We
mm-hmm.
went to the MMA Masters gym in Tokyo, but we only trained with each other. But some of the guys went to train with Imanari, and they said it was great. And obviously Japanese people are smaller than us. So like we are like giants there, but I would definitely like to do that. The next time I'll go for. Well, I just spoke to Wilco today that we should do a 2-week holiday in Japan,
mm-hmm.
and we probably will do it sometime soon, and then we will go train.
It's funny because you are giant in Japan, but on the other side they have only like a small people and huge people, with sumo guys,
and the judokas, they have some massive over 100 kilos,
like Satoshi Ishii also. But I recently watched some sumo on YouTube, and I think there are still a lot of people that they look Japan, but they are like Mongols from like Central Asia. It's funny. There's not only Japan people, and also like one of the biggest legends in judo was also like from Hawaii.
Yeah, Akebono. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting that there are, you know, still people around the world who does this. And about this quintet format. Or maybe not specifically quintet, but what do you think about team matches? Can it be future, let's say? I really like them. Like, first time I saw quintet, Polaris teams, I was like, really, it's really fun.
Yeah.
It's like, because it gives you this extra thing for you as a fan, that, you know, like being supporter of a team, you know, we have it in Europe in our blood because of the football and stuff like
you
that.
Guys, you guys, especially here in Poland.
let's not get there. Like, I don't know what you heard about our latest results in football. They are very, very weak.
Kurwa.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have really good players that really can't play with each other
together.
They don't create a team. Don't know why. Yeah, do you think this is something that will be developing, or like it's a solo sport?
No, I think the team thing will be there, but I think there is nothing like quintet. Quintet is special because I think, I don't remember who said it, maybe it was Craig Jones, but like they found a way to make stalling exciting. Do you know what I mean? Like, if, let's imagine, obviously our teams were very strong there, like Polaris team, we were relatively strong, B team was extremely strong, so nobody was so much worse than somebody else that it would be a mismatch.
Mm-hmm.
But at quintet, you sometimes have mismatches where a bigger guy goes against a smaller guy, or a weaker guy goes against Craig Jones. And then the question is not, can Craig Jones submit this guy in 2 minutes or whatever, then the question is, will he submit this guy? Because honestly, if a 5-year-old boy wants me not to submit them, if they just roll up in a ball and try to resist for 4 minutes, they probably can't have me not submit them. So quintet has figured out the way to make it very exciting. And also, you have to think when you submit somebody, because you will stay there. My worst fear was that I would fight with somebody, submit them, and be tired, and then I get Nicky Rod the next round. Mm-hmm. I was like, fuck, if that happens. So you have to be very strategical in quintet. Or what happens, for instance, in our team, since now the results are out and everyone knows what happened, like, we had a plan where me and Owen Livesey, we were kind of like, our job was to be rock, like, not get submitted. Mm-hmm. So two guys don't get submitted, and then we had Tarik and Jed, whose job was to, like, submit people, and then we had Gregor Gracie, who's like a hybrid, so he cannot get submitted or he can try to go for submissions, but, like, basically me and Owen, our job was don't fucking get submitted. Mm-hmm. So, like, we changed the roles like that. And obviously, we were so close to starting the things well with Jed. I don't know if you saw the armbar on J-Rod that he had. He had crazy deep armbar, fully extended. But J-Rod is like, I don't know if he's young or his shoulders are so flexible. Mm-hmm. He didn't seem to give a shit about this armbar. But we kind of thought when it happened, we were like, oh, if Jed gets this, we might do really well. Because next stop was going to be Tarik and Joseph Chen. And had we had that one victory over, it would mean that Jed stays with Joseph Chen. Even if that fight goes to a draw, Tarik will get the next guy, mm-hmm. who would have been Nicky Ryan, and then we would have fought with Greg Jones. So it would be a big change of mm-hmm. things for us had that submission happened. But obviously it didn't happen and we ended up losing. But Quintet has really found out a way to make it exciting. In any format. Polaris tried to do the same in the squats events that they had. They were exciting as well, but, like, nothing is like Quintet. It was absolutely crazy.
Mm. Is there still a rule that you can't use the close guard?
In Quintet?
Yeah.
No, but no heel hooks.
No heel hooks.
No
yeah,
heel hooks
yeah.
were but allowed. Yeah.
I believe, like, first Quintet have that you can... You can't use the close guard, or like after like a 5 seconds,
so
you have to open it.
I don't know the rules of Quintet too well, but I know that this year they had this rule called Shido, which means when you do a penalty, basically you get mounted. So the guy can choose if he wants back mount, like turtle guard, or if he wants mount.
But you have some warnings before that, or?
It can be a Shido straight away.
Okay.
So basically, if you take somebody's back, uh-huh. and you just stole from the back, they give you a Shido, then the guy whose back you had can mount you.
You can get Shido
yes.
when you
yes.
are on the back
any
of the
position.
The...
Any, oh, and fuck. They don't give a fuck. And also, they didn't have any like explanation on this is the limit for that. They were like, oh, we can just give you a Shido anytime.
Okay.
Even Sakuraba got a Shido in his own show.
Okay, interesting. Good that... Many people try other things because, you know, like, obviously making grappling exciting for someone who don't train is like our holy grail
yeah.
to make the sports as more marketable you could. And it's very common that in my podcast we talk about the rules because this is the topic that is always hot. But I like that you could use like a team tactic in Quintet or Polaris, but Varjak Adam said very very good also in my podcast that with every you can make every rule set like bad, like stall and to use them in a bad way. So it's more like about who is fighting and if they want to fight to make exciting matches, not the rule set.
It's true, but also at the Polaris squads we had a match between so when I did the first Polaris squads, it was the teams, and we had Mateusz Czeszyński. That's how I met these guys in Polaris. Mm-hmm. We had Mateusz, we had Kamil, we had me, we had Marcin Held was in this team.
Yes, yes.
We had
one quick note that in Poland, Mateusz like became a star, a well-known guy after beating Marcin Held
yeah.
At Polish Championship.
I heard
yeah.
about this one. Yeah, that's when after that Kamil was like, oh, this guy is good.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so I met these guys there and we had a match between Mateusz because they had this clock time, so you have 20 minutes or 25 minutes of fighting time mm-hmm. and each match is 5 minutes. And if there is a submission, it finishes earlier, obviously. So we had a match between Dominik Dillon and Mateusz that lasted 40 seconds. And that was just before the break. So we were losing by one submission. One guy got submitted from our team. And then we needed a submission back already then. And they had 40-second match. And Dominic Dillon is good, but like he's not Mateus's level. And Mateus already fought him once and submitted him. So we were like, okay, Mateus, you're just going to go there and fucking submit this guy really fast. And he nearly did it in 40 seconds. And it was so exciting, even though Dominic didn't want to do anything. He just wanted to not get submitted. All his plan was not to get submitted. When his back got taken, he was like happy about it because he has good back control defense. So even stalling from his side turned out to be like exciting because Mateus want to submit him so bad, but he don't want to get submitted. And it's exciting the way it goes. So you can do this with rules as well.
Okay, okay. Like I'm in because I liked it even a few years back. Me and my friend Marcin Soszyński, we even organized a team match in Gdańsk, Złomysz, against BJJ Gdynia, Lukasz Michalek's team, and it was like a purple and blue belt match. And it was fun. We didn't continue because of me, my fault. But we'll see. Maybe he will like resurrect this someday. But it was really, really fun. And I believe this is exciting because it's easier to get and after the team and to support the team. Especially that, you know, now most, at this point, most of this type of matches are like Team Polaris is a team of guys from many countries, many clubs, and many teams. Team Udolpho, like more take some stars and make them as a team.
More takes everyone who is good and puts them together.
Yeah, and you know, like if you go with your guys, your team, you train every day with to a battle, it is even better, I believe.
And that's what something that Gregor Gracie said very well at the press conference after we lost that referee decision to B team, is that he said to the crowd and to the interviewers that we only met each other 2 days ago, and Gregor was such a good team captain for this. He was like, guys, like you have to realize that we only met each other 2 days ago and we took these guys to referee decision. And we don't know each other very well. We don't know what we trained one time together only for this. So we don't know each other's strengths. We don't know each other's weaknesses. And we fight against a team who prepared all their career together and strongest team in the world. So he said that we should feel proud about ourselves. And we all felt like shit after losing, but that made it a little bit more better because like, okay, we don't have the luxury of training together all the time. And yet we do relatively well in this remark. So it's very interesting, this team thing, because like we obviously Polaris team will always be very separate, but I think next time they should probably bring us together a little bit closer, a little bit maybe we can meet in Europe before, or maybe we go to Japan a little bit earlier so we have more time to train together and things like this.
Yeah definitely. Santeri, I heard Andrzej Iwa told me that you are really into Nordic tradition, Nordic mythology. Tell me more about it. Is it like, you know, patriotic thing because you are from Finland, or you just feel it's awesome and worth to get into? Yeah, how it started and what you like the most about it?
I think it's a cultural thing. Like, for instance, my family is half Finnish, half Swedish. So we are Nordic people. We are very different from other people. I think that's why Poland and Finland, I feel at home here, because we have very similar customs, like you're a little bit distant and a little bit cold until you get to know each other and then you're the best friends. It's the same in Finland, but it just takes fucking longer time to get to know somebody. But Andrzej knows I have a lot of tattoos about Vikings and they actually made this study about Nordic people that we have some genetic mutation towards violence that they haven't found anywhere else except like Nordic countries. Especially in Finland when we drink alcohol to extreme violence. Yeah, a lot of our criminals have this. They've studied this. And I don't know if I have this or not, but I don't know if that had something to do with the Vikings, but I don't know if you heard of berserkers. Well, like the name berserker, but do you know what's a berserker?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a fierce warrior who they were like those Vikings who would fight in the front line, and they would like not give a fuck if they die. And you have to die in battle. If you die of old age, you're a pussy and you don't deserve to go to Valhalla. Mm-hmm. Unless you have done like remarkable deeds in your lifetime. So the biggest honor is to die in battle, and then the Valkyries carry you to Valhalla. So I don't know, I do, like yesterday I was thinking before the final, it will sound crazy, but I was thinking that I'll fucking die before losing this match. And I've had this before where I get into a space in my head where I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like when I fought with Bruno Lima last year, I was like, if he gets inside heel hook on me, I'm winning, I will not tap. I don't give a shit. I'll break my knee, I don't care. And I had this same feeling yesterday where I was like, I don't know how, but I will win. Or I might die, but I'm comfortable with dying. Obviously, it's a grappling match, so no one's probably going to die. But when that's your mentality, it's hard for someone to beat you. And I just have that in me. And I don't know if that's something that the Vikings had or if it's something that I just have personally, but like our forefathers were some badass people. They've done a lot of cool things. Finland is actually not a big Viking country. We were mostly just like doing our own thing back then. But like my family being from Sweden, the Swedes were more Vikings, and Danish, Norwegians, and Icelanders.
Like this is always make, you know, people surprised, but like the Finland isn't like Scandinavia, right?
We're Fenno-Scandinavia. Yeah. So if you look at Scandinavia, it's the mountains that we're talking about. So the mountains, they don't reach Finland. We don't have mountains in Finland. But we are mixed people. So we're like a mix of Russia, Sweden, Norway, Balts. Yeah, very many different countries. So for instance, our family is from Sweden. Like my grandfather and my older family, they speak Swedish. They don't speak Finnish usually. And we have a lot of cities that are, everything is duolingual, but we have cities that only speak Swedish. Ekenes, Hango, these cities, they only speak Swedish mainly. We have a whole island that is only Swedish. So we are very much, because we were under Sweden, then under Russia, then under Sweden back in the days before our independence. So we are very mixed. And yeah, that Viking thing really resonates with me. I was listening to Svalrand yesterday. Andrzej will know this band. I was listening to it before I went there, and like the music just gives me goosebumps. And I don't know if I'll die in battle and go to Valhalla, but it wouldn't be a bad idea.
Like old school Polish juditeiros always like, someone pass because of something, some accident or something like that, then I don't know, you know, post something on Facebook about that, they end with "see you in Valhalla." It's really, really common. And you know, the name of Berserkers team, which is one of the oldest Polish teams, speaks for itself. What would you recommend for people who would like to get more into like this Nordic culture, to, I don't know, to watch, to read, to listen?
So there's a lot of things you can do. First of all, go to Nordic countries. Go to Iceland. You will all lose your mind in Iceland. It's the craziest place after Japan, it's the craziest place I've ever been to. But like things to do easy at home is like, you can watch some series. You can watch the Vikings TV series, is very good. They have a lot of Nordic actors. They have a lot of Finnish actors there. And it's not fully historically accurate, but like quite a lot. Yeah. So you can watch that. That's amazing TV series. There's a good movie called The Northman about Vikings as well. Very good one. A bunch of video games. There's even some manga, I think, on Vikings. I haven't read that, but like there's so much information online about this. Or just read the stories. Read about Erik the Red, who founded Iceland, or Ragnar Lodbrok. So it's something that is very interesting topic, and I think if you're a fighter, you fucking gotta read about the Vikings.
Mm-hmm. And like a Nordic gods, who is your favorite?
I wouldn't say I have a favorite. I have a tattoo of Ragnarok in my back with the giant wolf Fenrir and Yggdrasil, the moon. I don't know. I mean, I have a tattoo of Odin in my leg, so I guess Odin would be Odin. Okay. Odin the Allfather would be a good choice.
I believe my favorite, not god but myth from Nordic mythology, is the one where there was like someone who proposed the gods that he will make the wall protecting Asgard one and a half year, and they thought it's impossible. And he asked for if he done it in 1.5 years, he will get Freya for a wife, and moon and a sun. And they okay, it's impossible. So we can go for it. And it happened that he had like a horse who was like unstoppable, and he takes the stones for this wall. It was far away, but this horse didn't stop, and he just more and more stones, and he was building this wall, and it was looked that he will manage to do this. So they asked Loki to do something about that, and he switched for a female horse and basically make that horse like to stop working and think about only the one. And they managed to make him not finish this wall, but Loki disappears and show up a few months later with a small horse. So when I read this, I was like, what the fuck? It's not like the Greek myth at all.
It's a lot of trickery and things like this in the Nordic. And it is funny. You know, in current language, Thursday, mm-hmm. The traces come, they are still with us to this day, especially in Swedish language. Onsdag is a date as well, Odin's day. We have a lot of different like little parts of this history in our culture. And I was speaking with Tarik Hopstock about this. The Norwegian soldiers used to scream to Valhalla when they fought, even at current wars. Mm-hmm. So, like, that they stopped doing that now because it means that they will die. Because that's what the warriors used to scream when they went to battle, because their goal was to die and go to Valhalla. But it's something that's very Nordic, and it's still there with us. Even, like, if you meet Icelanders, they're all Vikings. You cannot find a single Icelandic person who is not Viking. Everyone's name is Dottir, or like that's the daughter of somebody, or the son, Olafsson, Olaf's son. Mm-hmm. So it's the culture is still right there, and it's very fascinating for me to see. Especially in Spain, it's so funny when people say that they're Viking, and I'm like, dude, you're from Spain. How the fuck are you a Viking? I believe we each have our own thing going on, and like I'm very proud to be Nordic, and I believe it helps when I compete.
What else do you do when you don't do jiu-jitsu? Like, do you have like some other hobbies, or how you spend your free time?
Well, I mean, I don't really do anything specific. I mean, I can play FIFA and talk
You're
shit.
A gamer?
Yeah, but not like a lot. I spoke with Andrzej about this one. I do play The Witcher. like a little bit. I think I play too much PlayStation if you ask people around me. But, I mean, I train so much, and also I run a business, so I have the gym and everything. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't have any free time ever. And then when I have free time, I'm always traveling. Lately, I've been traveling so much that I haven't been home barely at all. So
about that, because you have like a little kid, right?
Yeah, I have a 2-year-old boy. Yeah.
Yeah, and how you manage? Because as you said, you travel a lot. How you manage to deal with the, you know, the missing of your close ones, and how your wife is dealing with this? I know she's also a black belt, so probably it's easier for her to understand, but still, with little child and not having you home, that's probably tough.
So we've talked about not talking about like family things or like personal things on like out like in public, so mm-hmm. I will not get too much into that. But okay. like about my son, I can say that it's hard when I don't see him, but I always, like, when I look at back what I was doing when I was a kid, I always looked up to my dad a lot. And like my dad did nice things in his life, but like he never done something that I've done, for instance. So I hope if my son gets into jiu-jitsu, he'll realize the deeds that I've done and the career that I've done is not normal at all. So I think the like my goal, basically my goal is that if he starts to do this, I want him to reach what I have, but I want it to be fucking difficult. Mm-hmm. So I want if he's like, oh dad, I'll do better than you, I want him to realize that it's fucking hard work, because I've been everywhere. I've been to ADCC, I'm gonna go second time, I've been to Quintet, I've fought this, I've medaled at this tournament, so I've done a lot of things in my career, and I hope that's something that if my son aspires to do that, I'll gladly have him do, but I want him to realize that his dad wasn't just an average guy who trained jiu-jitsu.
Sure. Backing up a little bit to this Nordic stuff and Finnish stuff, do you read some fantasy books? Because I'm asking because I'm huge Tolkien fan. I used to be even bigger. And I like that the Quenya, so Elven language, is based mostly on Finnish and Welsh. So I love to hear those languages, because I immediately hearing like those are elves speaking. So do you read some Tolkien, or it's not your thing?
I've read the Hobbit, the book. Yeah. I've read the original one as well, but it's such a long time ago that mm-hmm. I don't remember particularly about it. But I read The Hobbit when the movies came out, mm-hmm. and because I thought The Hobbit movie is like the book, but the book is so different than the movies. They added my favorite character, the pale orc, he wasn't even there in the book. I was so absolutely sad about that. But I heard about Tolkien making it about Finnish, like partially.
You know, this character of this orc, we could say he is in, you know, in those more specific books, like, let's say, like Silmarillion and stuff like that. We as this backstories. And you could say someone similar is there, so they use something else to put it in The Hobbit, but yeah, in original Hobbit, not at all.
I love that character. I was like, fuck, that's so cool that he fought Thorin Oakenshield and killed his father and everything, and god damn it wasn't true. And Legolas also wasn't in Hobbit either.
He wasn't there.
They added
he was
some
too young then.
Extra spices to that. I quite like Tolkien. I recently now I read more about Vikings. I read about real deeds right now. I just read a story about the French Foreign Legion. They have a very famous I don't remember the name of this, but they were in Mexico and they had this standoff where basically like 600 Mexican soldiers fought with 30 fighters from the French Foreign Legion, and they all died except two guys.
Can't believe about French that going to war like this.
Foreign Legion. Foreign Legion, not French.
Oh, okay.
The Foreign Legion.
Okay, okay.
It's the battle of something with A, not Amarillo, but like something like this. And they fought so hard that the commander of the Mexicans, there were two guys left, and they did a bayonet charge. Two guys against like 600. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have food, they didn't have anything, and all their friends had died and everything, and they all died with honor. And the last two guys, they charged out, and the Mexicans, they wouldn't shoot them. And they were like, fuck, we have to let these guys go. They are not human, they are devils. Mm-hmm. So that's a cool story about the French Foreign Legion. So I read more things like this, but mm-hmm. I did read the Tolkien's and a bunch of other books as well. I read Harry Potter as well.
Harry Potter is cool.
Yeah, man.
Cool as fuck. He it's very good written that you read this very, very quickly. This is I read a lot, and I read, I would say, rather quick than slow, but Harry Potter is, you know, like the longest part, I believe it was like a fifth part, and I was like, okay, so I bought the book, sit down. I took the comfortable chair, lamp, and water, anything I need. Okay, I start reading in the morning, only to maybe breaks for pee and for dinner, and then okay, last pages are like a little bit blurry, and why? And I end and watch the clock, and it was like 3 a.m. something like that. But I can't stop. Harry Potter is a fucking good book.
That happened with me with this game called Skyrim. I don't know if you know this game.
Yes, I know. But there is no other thing in the world that consume your time
than
quicker
books.
Than video games.
The video game.
With the book, you have some awareness of time passing. With the films also. With the video games, at all.
Like, so what happened with me, I had a fever and I bought the Xbox 360 or whatever it was back then, and I only bought it to have FIFA. I was like, fuck these nerd games. I will not get into that. But I was bored of playing FIFA, so I was like, oh, I'll do this game, Skyrim, put it in. And this was 10 in the morning, and then at 19:00 at 7 p.m. I realized that holy shit, I played for 7 hours. I haven't eaten anything, I haven't drunk anything. I was like, damn, this game is good.
Yeah. And you think Skyrim is better than Witcher?
I think Witcher is better.
Good. Good. We could still be friends.
I'm reading the book right now of The Witcher, the first one.
Yeah, like the stories?
Yes.
Okay. So the you start with the good one, like with the right one, let's say. Yeah, it's really, really cool book. If you will like it, but after that you could read. There is another book. It's a trilogy from the same author, Andrzej Sapkowski. It's called don't know in English. It's called Trilogia Husycka trilogy. It's about the time when the action is like there was a religious, how to say it, in Czech Republic, nowadays Czech Republic, there was a guy who have some other ideas about God and religion. Of course, what Christian church did, like they burned him, and in the Czechs were pissed and they started like a rebellion. And for few years it was like 15th century, and for like a few years nobody could do anything for them. There was like a what's the word when Christians go to make things right about no Christians on Middle East. What happened?
Not crusade, but
crusade. Yeah, and you could call it the same crusade, but in the heart of Europe, and they fucked them up for a long time. It collapsed because the inner conflicts between them. But the book is. It's not like a history book because there is a little bit of magic, and this is like a perfect proportions, and it's really cool. I will send you a link. It's a really good book.
I have this thing on my phone where I can read books. It's like a Netflix of books. I'll find it there, 100% sure.
Definitely.
After I get done with The Witchers.
Yeah, great.
I'm on the first one right now, so.
Yeah, so it took a little bit time.
Couple to go.
Yeah. You were in California for No Gear Awards. That was your only trip to US, or you've been there?
I've been 10 times maybe.
Okay, where you didn't been? You've been everywhere.
I've been everywhere. Oh, because the IBJJF Gi Worlds were there.
Yeah.
I've done those 5 times, and then I've done the No Gi Worlds once. I've been there. I've been to the US to train also a couple of times, so.
Okay, so what do you think about USA? You are like a fan, or you are,
yeah,
this
I
is
don't
like
really
a regular
give a
place?
Shit. Yeah, I don't really give a shit. I mean, it's a nice place, obviously, but I don't think I would like live there, probably. Okay. I think Europe is a pretty nice place to live.
Okay. And where did you train?
So we used to go to train at in AOJ, sorry.
Okay.
At Art of Jiu-Jitsu, this was in the Gi, when I was still doing Gi. And then I train at Brea Jiu-Jitsu, it's now at Dan Lukehart's gym. I've been there to train. And where else? And I've been to New York to train, Marcelo Garcia's gym.
Would you say that AOJ, Mendes Brothers are the best place to, if you are a gi player, to train?
Probably if you are like smaller. Mm-hmm. If you are until like middleweight, I think it's the best place for you to train. Like when I went there, I was there with Tommy Langacker and Vegard, for instance. I was a black belt. I think Tommy was a brown belt. Then first year I went there, I was still a brown belt as well. That was a long time ago. And the training was amazing.
You was a black belt and Tommy Langacker was a brown belt?
Yeah, I was black belt before him.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
I'm older than him.
Really?
Yeah, I'm 32. Tommy is 29, maybe 30.
Okay, you look younger than 32.
Thank you.
How old am I?
I don't want to guess. You're 33.
34.
There we go, close.
Yeah.
90?
Or 89, yeah. Okay, you know, it's I'm just surprised because, you know, I heard about Tommy way before, like many years ago, and about you like few years ago, so that's why I'm surprised,
because I was shit until recently.
And what about the gi? I know you still coach in the gi.
I train every week. I train gi Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. I train in the gi as well. But obviously I do no gi before or after. Mainly I do no gi right now, but like I'll still teach. I mean, I have a gym, so I need to teach in the gi, and we have a gi program. We have a lot of competitors in the gi, so I train with them obviously. And also I promised my friend to do one more London Grand Slam, so I will do next year's London Grand Slam.
Nice.
Unless it conflicts with the ADCC or something big, but I'll do that. And yeah, hopefully Wojcicki don't come to avenge his gi loss to me.
Yeah, I was really, really surprised when I discovered that you have a win over Adam in your record.
And Adam has a win over me in no gi. That makes zero sense that I beat him in gi and he beat me in no gi.
Zero. You're right. Zero sense. Hello.
And we can fight again, but definitely not in the gi.
Yeah. Okay, Santari, since I have to catch a train, I have last question for you. It was really fun to talk with you, and I believe we could like take it really longer. But as you are in Poland regularly, I believe that's not have to be our last one. But I have a question that I always ask at the end all my guests. So imagine that you get a call about that someone want to have a private lesson with you. Someone famous, but out of the martial art world. That could be like a, you know, singer, actor, writer, anybody. You know, having a private lesson, you get to know this person, have some connection. So who you would like to be to excite you that you could meet this person and train with them, show jiu-jitsu to them, talk to them?
So private is not my favorite thing in the world, but like if Margot Robbie calls me for a private, I would probably go.
Okay, like this answer. This is the only second one. Then someone said something about some hot chick.
Really?
Yeah.
Everyone else is weird.
Yeah.
People say like Bill Gates or something.
No, but Bill Gates didn't show up yet in this conversation. Jordan Peterson came up in this conversation.
Get
Denzel
the
Washington
get
two
the
times.
Fuck out of here.
Yeah, I have also problems with Jordan Peterson recently, because he started well when he first like show up publicly, you know, with this calm style of arguing with the journalists and stuff like that. There was some merit in that, but recently he only like some weird stuff he's writing on Twitter, so mm-hmm. Yeah, don't like him at this point or either.
So you see hot chicks, no problem.
Okay, and now it's time for you, if you want to, you know, say something, some thanks, some cheers, some coming outs. Now is the time for you
to say
anything.
Fuck, thanks everyone for listening to this, and like please come train with me in my gym if anyone's around. If you're a very, very good guy, you don't need to pay anything. You just have to smash me in training. And my gym is in Malaga, Spain. Everyone is welcome to come and nothing. Dziękuję.
Okay, so congrats again and see you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers.
Dzięki za wysłuchanie odcinka do końca. Jeśli macie jakieś pytania do gościa lub do mnie, piszcie śmiało w komentarzach na Facebooku, Instagramie lub YouTubie. Oczywiście zachęcam również do szerowania materiału. Os i do usłyszenia.